It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Gil T. Wilson. Nerd
Up! Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson, and this time we're joined by...
Eric Billingsley.
Tim Coker.
Tim Mattson.
Isaac Wilson.
And a special guest, really not a new guest, you're like I said, a repeat offender, Tony Collins.
Yay!
So Tony, welcome again back to the podcast.
Apparently I didn't mess it up too bad last time you invited me back.
So. No poo was flung, so everything's good. But we decided that was a very important reason for us to get together on this one because Joker came out and everybody's talking about it, including us amongst ourselves. And what better reason for a podcast than just a bunch of people talking together anyway? So, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about now. I want to give everybody a fair warning. There will be spoilers. The show's been out for 2 weeks now.
Spoilers there be.
Yes. And I wanted to have a great conversation with this because it's a great, well, it's got different aspects to it. I'll put it that way. I'm not going to say great yet about movie wise, but anyway, but it's got these different aspects that are just, you cannot talk about them without revealing some spoilers. So again, it's been out 2 weeks and you got to talk spoilers. So there will be spoilers.
We all know where it's going anyway. It's not like the ending is going to be any kind of huge surprise to anyone. Everyone knows, you know, that Joker's not going to die at the end of this movie.
Right.
We know his future. So I don't think that there's anything in this that would really qualify as a spoiler in its most literal sense.
It's kind of like a shouting spoiler before you review Titanic.
Yeah. Boat sinks.
By the way, boat sinks. Yeah.
So you're telling me that Anakin is Arthur Fleck's father? Wait. Oh no, different part. But so anyway, and I want to throw it out. We'll start out with you, Eric. I want to what your thoughts are. What I want to do is everybody kind of hit with their thoughts.
Arthur Fleck is Jared Leto's father.
Oh, boy. He wishes.
That's impossible.
But I'd like to throw it out. Like each of us, just a brief synopsis of what you thought of the film, and then we'll go into details after we each get a little chance to throw just a little summary of what you thought. So we'll start with you, Eric. What do you think of the movie?
Well, okay. We, as all our listeners know, none of us are great fans of the Warner Brothers DC collaborations for the most part. This is pretty much the best DC movie that I've seen since the first one and one and a half Christopher Nolan films. After that, they lost me. But this, and I didn't think that they needed to go any darker, and they really didn't need to go this dark, but I'm glad that they did, if that makes any sense. I wound up, unlike you, I'm not going to say that it was great, but I couldn't stop thinking of it after I walked out of the theater, and I'm still thinking of it, a week later.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely amazing performance from Joaquin Phoenix. I remember thinking when they said that they were going to bring back the Joker, I was like, oh God, you know, that's a losing proposition for any actor. No one's going to be able to follow Heath Ledger in that role.
Right. Or die, you know?
Right. And then I heard the name Joaquin Phoenix, and then the wheels started turning. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Now, if anyone can make this role their own, it's going to be Phoenix, because he's one of the most amazingly versatile actors that I think we have alive today. So it was his performance that is, you know, at least 50% of why I like the film.
Okay.
There are some plot snags here and there, but it's not a plot driven movie. That, again, speaking back to this, is not going to be really spoilers. It's completely a character film. It's how this character, how this persona was built, and they go into some really dark areas. But, and here's the thing where I'll probably get into disagreement with some people, is I felt that at the heart of this was a sympathy, or at least an empathy, with mental illness, like I've not seen in many films. And I don't mind admitting I have depression and anxiety issues, especially anxiety issues, but you know, and it's, you know, people who don't have any kind of mental illness have a hard time understanding it. I think that this movie actually might help some people understand mental illness a little better, if that not going too far.
No,
but
I got to tell you, you were talking here, one of the things I did automatically is from the movie, whenever his what seems to be what becomes a fake girlfriend the little fake gunshot to the head thing that becomes an ongoing thing through the movie. I just did that now, and I'm like, holy crap, I'm part of the problem. You know, because that's one of the, when you said mental issues and then the exploration of them. And I'll talk about that when it comes to my turn. So, but let's go to Tim. I mean, I just want a brief one here, of course. Tim Coker, what did you think of the movie?
I liked it less than Eric, I think, but I didn't expect to like it much at all. So I actually thought it was like, it's a kind of thing where I'd either give it a B minus or a C plus, depending on what day it is or how I'm feeling kind of about it. I thought it was very competently made, very competently acted, good cast. Robert De Niro didn't just phone it in. I thought he was actually good in the role. And Joaquin Phoenix, you know, it's a really showy actor showcase kind of part, and he chews it up and does a great job with it. And he totally inhabits it. There's never a second in the movie that I'm not feeling like I'm watching an Oscar bid, but and I don't know how to get over that, because, you know, if he's a master actor and he's at the top of his craft and he's had all of these high profile, crazy person roles and all this, you know, it's really hard for me to turn off that baggage and say, I believe this character, you know? So that took me out of it a little bit, that it was such an actorly movie. I thought that the string of things that he experiences were kind of surprisingly like cliched and then ironic. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like, I think in a way it's good because, you know, Eric, when you talk about the movie encouraging people to take another look at mental illness, I hadn't really credited the movie with that. And I hope that's the case. I think that's a really, you know, that would be really worthy. And I don't, like, I can't watch this movie as anybody but myself, right? And if other people who don't have the same familiarity with depression and anxiety that we do, you know, if it benefits them, I think that's a wonderful thing. I mean, I don't know. Do we want to get into the mental illness question? Because I have kind of a longer point about it, but right now we're kind of going around for brief thoughts. So I'll table it for now.
Okay, yeah, because I'm going to bring that up as well, too. So I'll be the last one to review, and that we'll start off with that, because I think that's a big issue with this one. So let's go to Tim Mattson. Matt, what do you think?
I think it was definitely a film. I definitely watched the film. And
no question about that.
I can confirm that a movie was seen. I really did. I did like it. I enjoyed it. I'm with Tim on the Oscar bait performance. And I think that I have real feelings about Joaquin Phoenix, because I kind of feel like Joaquin Phoenix is living a performance art piece, that his entire life is a bit of a performance. And I think that this character is just another extension of the role that he performs as Joaquin Phoenix.
Ding, ding, ding.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
The big difference between him, this performance, and Heath Ledger's performance is that Heath Ledger was creating this character within strict rules of the DC universe. There were a lot of strictures put upon him, but he still managed to make this creation that was wholly original and unique and so of that movie that it's hard to imagine another Joker after watching that film. But Joaquin Phoenix is operating in the same set of rules and still manages to turn out a performance that just screams, give me an Oscar. And I don't know. I'm a little, I can't really quite figure out how I feel about that, because it is undoubtedly an impressive performance that he's given. Mm-hmm. And the work that he's put into that character is undeniably solid, but I find it far less effective than Heath Ledger's. And maybe that's just because I saw it second and I saw Heath Ledger first, but I think Heath Ledger's Joker is just a legendary creation. And I'm not convinced that we will be talking about Joaquin Phoenix's Joker 10 years from now, the way we are about Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah. Notice we're not even mentioning Jared Leto's.
I don't feel there's any reason to mention it.
No, it's a footnote.
Yeah, it definitely is a footnote. Yeah.
Tim, you really are touching on something important there that I hadn't considered. And that is like kind of, I think that there's a characteristic of the Joker that I did not see in this movie that was, for me, demonstrated enormously by the Heath Ledger performance and the way the Heath Ledger Joker was written, which is his mercurial, unpredictable brilliance. And in this movie, Arthur Fleck just stumbles into each of his experiences. And then when he goes on the talk show and commits his great public crime, there's nothing clever or brilliant or subversive about it. Well, it's politically subversive, sure, but there's nothing surprising about it. You know he's going to pull out his gun, probably, you know, he doesn't have the Joker gas. He doesn't have any of the stuff. And I'm fine with him not having all the gadgets and whatever. But like at the end of the movie, he's beloved by this crowd, and that's great. But, you know, and they're presumably going to do his bidding now. But what I don't get is, like, I'm not sure that he's like any kind of master strategist or any kind of genius.
Right.
No.
You know what I mean? No. He actually seems kind of dumb. Well, and
can I just speak to that real
quick? Yeah, please do. Please do.
I mean, this is an origins film. And at the end of the film, he has started on the trajectory that will eventually get him to the Joker that we all know.
Is he, though? I don't know if I agree with you.
I think so. I mean, just because he hasn't pulled off any kind of capers or made any kind of great plan, he's not, at the point that we're seeing him, he has no confidence in himself to be able to do those things. But after this, after he's been venerated by all these people and you know, he's made a name for himself, I think now that confidence is going to blend with the sheer insanity and create the Joker. Now, I'm not the comic reader. I've only read a couple of graphic novels. So you guys probably all know the Joker better than I do, but just based on all the cinematic Jokers that I've seen, I don't have any problem at all believing that this was his origin.
Okay, well, now, let's get back to that in a second. I got a couple more summaries to get through here. Isaac, yeah. I know this one's going to take forever because you know how Isaac likes to talk forever. But Isaac, what's your summary? What do you think of the movie? What stood out for you?
I don't really watch or know a lot about like anything DC. And I also don't know a lot about Joaquin Phoenix, and that's probably helpful because I just enjoyed the movie as like a psychological drama rather than enjoying it as part of a bigger universe, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like it was just watching a man descent into madness, basically.
Yeah, and that you know what? I'm going to talk about that now.
If it was just that this movie and it like dropped the if really the only thing I had a problem with was Bruce Wayne in it and that's about it. Like other than that, like I think Thomas Wayne was fine, you know, the entire thing about higher up people being douchebags.
Yes.
But like I just felt like Bruce didn't need to see Martha and Thomas die again.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Now Tony, I'm going to give you a chance. I know you haven't seen it yet, but from what you've gathered, what are your thoughts so far?
Well, I mean,
and hearing,
you know, first off, I think the thing that I want to mention is how fantastic it is to be comic book fans in this time. I mean, whether you liked Joaquin Phoenix or not, whether you enjoyed this movie or not, his performance in a comic book inspired movie is being considered for an Oscar. Oscar buzz.
Yep.
So the fact that comic book movies, for lack of a better term, have come into the mainstream and now being taken seriously, you know, whether you're a fan of DC, whether you're a fan of Marvel, I think it's fantastic. That's the part that excites me. Now, as far as the movie goes, Isaac mentioned something, and I think, you know, is kind of honestly, one of the reasons I haven't seen the movie yet is because I think you could have titled this movie just about anything else, and it would have been essentially the same movie. Mm-hmm. They titled it Joker to play on that idea that we all love comic book movies and holy crap, I'll go see a Joker movie because this really could have been named anything else.
And that's exactly my point. Here's my summary, my idea. Okay, first of all, I liked it more than I thought I ever would. I mean, I went in there and we're talking about just the other day, Tony, you and I were talking about, I said, basically, this is just a really, they had a really nice script, and they said, hey, comic book movies are selling. Let's see if we can tie this in with comic books. And that was the way I went into it. And I, as I left the theater, the whole thing is like, holy crap, that was really good. Now, the big thing that got me was, okay, they tied it in with the comic books in a very nice way, I thought. I mean, yeah, I really think that the Bruce Wayne thing could have stayed. Thomas Wayne, we could have stayed with Thomas and him getting killed, him and Martha, and just have like a view, like the, you know, the inevitable pearls dropping when Martha gets killed. Say Martha. Anyway, just had to do that.
Why did you say that name?
So, they had to have that scene, God. And that would have been perfect for Bruce Wayne. And that would have been the only time we needed to see him. But the whole little other scenes with him is like, yeah, I'm with Isaac on that. We didn't necessarily need that.
Now, let me ask a question for those guys, for those of you that have seen the movie. Everything I've seen, a lot of the online people, the YouTubers, posed the question whether anything you saw in the movie actually happened. Did any of it actually occur? Because Arthur
you
Fleck.
You mean in the comic books?
No, okay. I mean in the world of the movie, because Arthur Fleck is himself an unreliable narrator,
mm-hmm. right?
And that's they did flashbacks where, you know, his relationship with the girl mm-hmm. didn't actually happen. Right. That was all in his right. mind. So how much of what was seen was all in his mind, right up to and including the shooting? You mm-hmm. know, the big climactic mm-hmm. thing in the third act. And, you know, did any of it actually happen? Because we've all been at some point in our lives going, man, if I could have the ideal version of my life, this is how it would, and I would be famous mm-hmm. and I would be beloved and throngs of people would follow me and be at my beck and call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so is what we saw in the movie or is what was seen in the movie make-believe.
Yeah, and that's one of the issues that I have with it is that it's you really don't know, and I don't think it matters. I
disagree. I think it absolutely does.
Well, see, I think the aspect that you're just seeing a man go crazy, work his way through it, and you find out that it's not, you know, it started back in childhood. It's not just something sudden happened, you know, something just happened all of a sudden.
He didn't just suddenly fall into a vat of chemicals.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, no vat of chemicals involved, but basically, the progress was there, and yeah, some of the stuff there's some of the stuff that even now I'm like, was that real or not? But at the point I'm like, I'm thinking, I don't think I need to know that. But I will say that the whole, to me, here's what I walked away with in the movie. In summary, is that right? That's a focus on what today's society is. We've got a clown leading the country, and and we showed a clown that could take over for another clown. But anyway, but the thing is, the way society is so divisive, he went on to this talk show with Robert De Niro, not because, and he reveals this, not because, oh, I'm going to be famous, but because De Niro, was good, all he wanted him on there was to make funny. And that's right now the way we treat the mentally ill. No matter what form of mental illness, whether it's like from autism all the way to, you know, depression, whatever it is.
Twitter addiction.
Yeah, Twitter addiction, yes. We treat them like, oh, they're there to be made fun of. They're second-rate citizens. They don't deserve the help. I mean, all funding gets, first thing that gets cut is mental illness funding of all sides. That's the reasons why we have, and again, opinion here, that's the reasons why we have these gun problems right now. They're not gun problems. They're mental illness problems. We need to find the problem with that. And I think this movie focuses on that perfectly, showing that, hey, here's how society treats these people. Look, they cut his funding. He no longer had a therapist to go to, no longer had drugs to take. You know, what's he going to do? He got fired from his job because, well, okay, he brought a gun to a children's hospital, but okay, that might be a different story, but he still got fired, but he's crazy.
That scene is capital H hilarious, though.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. And
it was, the moment that was the most legitimately funny in the entire yeah. film was the moment that gun fell out. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. I don't know. And
he's like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Holds his finger to the mouth and yeah.
I only laughed at whenever he scared the midget.
Yeah, when he scared. Yeah. And that's another thing. And the poor, the little person, you know, because we have to be politically correct. They were making fun of him throughout the movie. Okay, again, this is set back in the late 70s, I think. Early 80s, yeah. Somewhere around there. Okay. And I was trying to judge by the movies that were showing. But anyway. You know, we made fun of people back then. Well, there were jokes about everything. There were dead baby joke books. There were Pollock joke books. You know, there were, we made fun of people back then, and that's what they did. And now
you're going to fall into the thing that Todd Phillips was talking about when he was talking about this film, that you couldn't make comedies anymore because of woke culture.
Right. Well, I'm starting to agree with that. I'm a big fan of Bill Burr, and Bill Burr says, no, we can still make fun of him. It's just people need to settle down. And I think that's the way
it comes down to pointless cruelty. That's what it comes down to.
Yes, right? Intent and cruelty.
If the only comedy you're capable of creating is comedy that gets its appeal from the discomfort of being pointlessly cruel, then you probably shouldn't be a comedian.
Right.
Not now. Right. That kind of comedy isn't really welcome anymore.
There's a difference between someone who punches down with their comedy and someone like George Carlin that punches up.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
You know, George Carlin is revered as a great American comedian because he punched up at the powerful in society and the absurdity of society, not down at the people who are impoverished or mentally ill or handicapped.
Yeah. Well, you
can make plenty of great comedy.
That's being a bully.
Well, you talk about the idea of intent. One of my favorite stand-up comics, Christopher Titus, does a bit about the word retard. Now, in his bit, he said I've never once used that word in talking about someone with Down syndrome or someone who had a disability, mental or physical. I've never once used that word in that context. But if you've got a friend who you go out and you go drinking and he's hanging out the car window drunk, screaming at the cops, calling them a bunch of names, that guy is a retard. and I think, for me, that makes a lot of sense. It's in the context. It's in the intent. And that's, you know, what you were talking about. If you intend it to be cruel, then that's not comedy. That's not funny.
Yeah. And that's another thing with that word, too, retard. I mean, the word itself, retard, means to stunt or to prevent or to, you know, restrict. And then the whole term for someone that has that, used to be in that diagnosis, was mentally retarded. That means their mental capacities were stunted. Okay. And so that kind of, we got shortened and everything else like that. Now I wrote in a thing. I said, yeah, it'd be, and this is a completely different subject, not about anybody mentally deficient. I said, look, we all need to talk politics. We need to be able to talk freely and not get mad at each other and try to put each other down. I said, we do not want to retard the growth of free speech. Uh-huh. Someone came on. This is on Facebook, by the way. So you know what's going to happen next.
I can't imagine
Facebook
there.
Yeah, Facebook does. Facebook does.
Yeah. Someone said, "Oh, we don't use that word around here." I'm like, "What word? Freedom of speech? I don't understand." And they go, "Retard. We know what you mean. You're trying to put us down." I'm like, "What?" And so again, it's in this society. It's become everybody's defensive about everything else. You know, and it's like you're taking it to an extreme that no one had any intention at all to talk about that side of things. So again, but with the Descent into Madness from this movie, you see that it's not just him. It was actually, you know, from his childhood, from his mom who adopted. That was a weird story, by the way. That was like when they revealed how he was adopted, I was like, holy cow, what a sad life he had. But when it came to the point when he was on the talk show with Robert De Niro, I'll tell you what, I expected him to shoot himself, if anything, or just to kind of hold people hostage. I did not expect the gun to be fired, realistically. When he shot De Niro and the way they filmed that, you ask Isaac in the middle of the theater, I'm like, oh, you know,
yeah.
I was like, what? And I looked over at Isaac. He goes, you knew that was coming. I'm like, not like that.
Oh, 100%. That had to. I knew Robert De Niro was dead meat walking early on in that film.
Well, once he started making fun of him,
I figured it was coming, and I went to go pee the first time seeing it at the exact moment, like the exposition happened where he was shown on the show, and like he saw himself on the show. I missed that part entirely the first time, but like whenever he got the call that he was on the show, and he started doing like his knock knock jokes or whatever, and I was like, yeah, he's not going to shoot himself; he's going to shoot.
Oh, wow!
It makes structural sense. Bruce's parents were killed by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And the Joker has got to personally kill his own parents. And Murray is his spiritual father. He kills his mom. He also has to kill his dad.
Oh my God. Oh, I did not put that together. Wow.
Mental note, must be as clever as Tim.
Yes. Thank you. No, seriously, thank you, Tim. That was awesome. I did not put that together.
Don't you like listening to people and talking to people who make better movies than showed up in the theater?
Well, let me just say this. I think my favorite joke in this entire film, and I think it was a great joke, is that they somehow tricked all of us into watching yet another fucking Batman origin film.
Yep.
That was
God, it wasn't even Batman's origin movie, and we still had to watch Thomas and Martha and watch the pearls break.
We had to watch
another
string of pearls hit the ground.
Oh my God. I swear to God, there should be a moratorium on pearls in Batman. I have seen pearls hit the ground so many times in a Batman story that I never have to see it again.
Well, you know, they should be Oyster Man by now.
You know, somebody talking on YouTube that was talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. One of the things that they've spectacularly done up to this point is not showed us Uncle Ben dying for like the third or fourth time. And then somebody made the comment that, yeah, they have. It's just that in this universe, Tony Stark is Uncle Ben.
Oh, no.
So we all watched Uncle Ben, in quotes, die.
Oh, I guess so, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Spoilers, by the way.
Didn't the movie come out like a year ago?
Still, you gotta say spoilers.
Yeah, people get upset.
You said it after you said the spoilers.
That's the joke.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, so I saw this.
By the way, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
Spoiler.
So I saw this as a movie of they could have taken it out of the DC comics, and I think it would have been a beautiful script, but I don't think as many people would have seen it since, you know, that once they branded it Joker. And they, I thought they did a nice job of doing that. I could have done without the Bruce Wayne origin story. I mean, seriously, but it was nice to see Thomas Wayne, and that was the reason the upper echelon were the target, and not because they tweet too much, but because they are. And
now, do you guys think that this Joker will make an appearance in the Robert Pattinson, the Batman?
Not a chance.
I bet there's a decent chance for the sequel, though.
I mean, yeah. I remember reading that I think Todd Phillips said this wasn't really supposed to be part of a bigger universe. It was just supposed to be its own like thing.
And I certainly hope that that's the case. I think DC maybe has finally learned their lesson and are going to stop trying to be Marvel. And they're going to do their own thing. They've got some great characters. Just make really interesting, compelling movies with those characters and don't try to tie them into a greater universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's be real. That's one of the only things Marvel has going for it right now. Or not even now, actually, because most of their best heroes are dead.
No, Thomas Wayne has been mentioned a few times here, and I think that this is an important point, is that Thomas Wayne is not the Thomas Wayne that we have ever seen in any Batman movie that I've ever seen anyway. This is a very different take on him. And of course, this movie is supposed to be from Arthur Fleck's perspective. Mm-hmm. To me, it does not matter whether that I can identify what's real and what's not real. In fact, if it did, I don't think I would have enjoyed the movie. I was aware early on that there were things going on that were only going on in his head. But I think that to delineate that any further would have been, spoon feeding, and that's not what I enjoy.
Yeah, but there's a line to walk between spoon feeding and competent filmmaking when it comes to giving people a clue or indicating when something is fantastical. Because early on, I thought the clue was going to be the blue lighting, because his very first fantasy sequence was in the cold blue light of the television.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then like the next three sequences, when it was clearly happening in his head, they color graded the film to have this blue cast to it. But then after I believe it was the second time that he fantasized having a date with his neighbor, that blue tint went away. And so from that point on, there were no clues as to whether you were in his head or not.
I didn't even pick up on those clues.
Well, Isaac pointed out a couple things to me. Isaac, tell them what your theory was on those fantasies.
I thought whenever it was just the sad reality is whenever the music was just actually somber music, and whenever it was like delusional fantasies. Like, I'm pretty sure the music got more discordant during those scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, he pointed that out during the movie, and I caught it every time. I'm like, I think you're onto something on that one, yeah.
That's possible, yeah.
So I'm thinking, definitely a combination of the two. I mean, you're right. At one point, they stopped doing the blue thing, and it's like, well, wait, is that real?
Well, and do you suppose that they did that because that's supposed to be the moment where the fantasies started to become reality for Arthur Fleck?
Oh, that's entirely possible. I hadn't really thought about that.
You know, so that, I mean... You tell yourself a lie enough times and it becomes your truth, and maybe that is the moment where it became his truth.
I mean, it could signify that that's when him being off his meds finally took effect.
Yeah.
And he couldn't tell anymore.
Yeah. All right. See, we got some good theories going here. I like this. That's what we're about.
I think it's also important to realize that no one there was no person at any point who extended a hand or tried to help him.
Right.
I mean, at the very beginning, we see him in the you know, court, some sort of social services social worker who is taking absolutely zero interest in him and listening to nothing that he's saying to her. And I think that that's a big theme of the film as well. Now, one other thing that I just wanted to say is that if you haven't seen the movie, you wouldn't recognize this. But people keep comparing this to Taxi Driver and a couple of other Scorsese films. But the Scorsese film that this is most definitely hatched from is King of Comedy. And I mean, that's the whole reason that De Niro is cast in the role that he's cast in. Now, you don't have to see King of Comedy to enjoy Joker. It's really a sideline thing. But for me, I enjoyed it because I thought, you know, it was kind of a shout out to a lesser known Scorsese film that should have more attention. And if you haven't seen the King of Comedy, I highly recommend that you do.
It's been years and years and years since I saw King of Comedy. And when you brought that up before on our group chat, I'm like, I'm going to have to check that out because I could see where, could you kind of explain a couple of things? I'm like, I can see where that could definitely be. I definitely will revisit King of Comedy. But one of the things when you mentioned Scorsese, I've kind of got, it's like a burr under my, it's like the guy says Marvel movies are not needed and not necessary. And I'm like,
they are not cinema.
They're not cinema. Yeah. It's like, that's pretty cinema. It's just because there's not a bunch of gangsters shooting each other. Well, it's, you know.
And my biggest issue with that statement is, you know, it's not a clear definition as to what cinema
yeah,
is.
Yeah, true.
Because just saying they aren't cinema is
what do you
really
mean
pretentious.
Like saying that they're not art. Okay. What is art?
Yeah.
Right. Do we have a single definition of art that we all agree upon?
Right.
I think so.
If I paid good money to go see it in the cinema, that makes it cinema.
Yes.
You know, I'm not offended by it at all. I feel like I don't know that I disagree with him that these movies aren't cinema in the same way that, you know, that his movies are the movies that really impassionate, you know, that really fired him up when he was a kid are. I don't think he's wrong that they are sort of like theme park rides. Like they don't feel the way that other movies do. They don't do the same things that other movies do. Like I don't go to them for the same satisfaction I go to, like when I went to see, I don't know, Booksmart a few months ago. Right. Like,
It's a
different experience for me. And I think he's being more than a little high handed about it, but at the same time, I'm okay with somebody
it's all part of a well-balanced diet.
I also
think. And I'm okay with somebody who spent his career trying to elevate the art form, you know, not being super down with these movies because, you know, they are super commercial and, you know, like, I don't know, watching this movie, a lot of the time watching the movie, I was really kind of focusing on the question of, you know, the only reason any of these movies have to exist is because the intellectual property is there to be exploited, and the movies need to generate profit for the people who have invested and bought the intellectual properties, right? That's why these movies exist.
Well, I got to say, Tim, go ahead and finish that.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with comic books. Comic books only ever existed. Like, we only ever have Superman and the Fantastic Four and whatever because they needed to have just enough story to hold the ads together.
Right.
You know, so
that's true.
So that's absolutely what we're falling in love with here.
How else were they?
At least what I fell in love with. And I always bridle at people who want to be too pretentious and talk about it as our modern mythology and all this stuff. Because on a certain level it is, but on a certain level it's absolutely not. It's just
a way to sell X-ray glasses.
Yeah. And it's cultural junk food that we really enjoy, you know, and it's a diet of mashed potatoes at the movies. That's fine, you know, but I mean, I'm not going to come down on Scorsese too much for talking about that, because he's probably used to a better meal.
Sometimes I just want to go watch Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, because I know that it is going to be 2 hours of just ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes that's what I'm in the mood for. Sometimes I want a greasy cheeseburger, and sometimes I want filet mignon.
Well, that's
absolutely
the thing.
Correct.
A perfect example right here is, Tim, you said Booksmart, you saw that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, probably about the same time I went and saw another classy art film. I went and saw Rambo Last Blood. So, see, we're all...
That was the single funniest movie I have seen all year.
It was... Was it supposed to be?
I don't know. I worry about myself. I think I might be a bit of a sociopath, because when guys are getting absolutely eviscerated on the screen, I'm sitting in a theater with a dozen other people laughing, laughing out loud.
Yes. And I was like, should I? No. Yeah. And that's the thing. There's a difference between movies. And
if you go into Rambo Last Blood expecting a Scorsese-esque picture, you are delusional.
Right.
You know, it was written, directed, and starred in by Rambo, by Sylvester Stallone.
Exactly. And there's so many diverse, I mean, like right now, showing at our Eagle Theater, which, by the way, the sponsor of this podcast, we got to thank him as a million times as we do. Tony and I get to enjoy it just about every day. Well, I don't know. We don't go that often, do we?
Not right now. I'll tell you what. During the big summer blockbuster time, they lose a buttload of money to me. But thank you, Eagle Theater. And don't forget to pick up your 2020 Eagle Theater bucket.
No.
They've got those coming up.
Where you get the free popcorn every time you come in with
it. Reduced
price.
Your reduced price refill on those 2020 buckets.
Nice plug. That's perfect. Perfect, man. But yeah, that right now they have showing... of course, Joker, the Addams Family animated,
Downton Abbey.
Yeah, Downton Abbey. That's the one I was trying to think. And then like a couple others. But so they got the comic book movie. They got the kids animation. They've got the I guess the nap time movie.
Whatever Downton Abbey.
They've got the celebrity movie.
The highbrow,
Gemini Man.
Highbrow PBS crowd.
Oh yeah, Gemini Man.
Oh, Gemini
Where you
Man.
Can watch
yeah.
Will Smith as Will Smith. Interact with younger Will Smith, also playing Will Smith.
And so, you know, that right there will just show you a perfect example of what cinema is. It's like it's all those put together. And this movie fits in with all those, and any other comic book movie does too as well. But this one, I think the thing I walked out with is that this one had a point, and maybe it's just because I'm focused on that right now, because I have an issue with that I'm just right now, I'm fighting with everybody I know, even my own cousins. With the whole white power okay symbol thing and the circle game, there are people, somebody got kicked out of forever, the rest of their life. They can no longer go to a Cubs game because they did that on camera. Isaac did it on camera at a local TV station here. He didn't get kicked out of a Cubs game.
I also didn't get expelled from school.
Yeah, you didn't get expelled from school. And the black cameraman that saw him said, hey, I saw that, you know. They know that it's a game you play. The circle game, and people go, you got me, you know?
And then you get punched in the arm.
Yeah. At what point did it become a racist thing?
Well, 4chan, they made a hoax out of it. They distribute it, and then grandma that forwarded those Nigerian prince emails says, oh my gosh, it's white power. No, it is not. It's a circle game. And stop doing that, people. Stop trying to appropriate my culture. But on the same thing.
Oh, my God. Yikes.
And so with that same thing.
I'm the youngest one here. The circle game is my culture.
Cultural appropriation.
But the thing is, that symbol, that thing, it's been a fun game. I played it when I was a kid. And I've used astronauts, use the OK symbol. When I was doing air traffic control for the U.S. Navy, the pilots, whenever everything was good, A-OK, they gave you the symbol. There was no white power intent involved. And now people are going crazy about it because they're appropriating that. That's what I see society doing right now.
I have a far more offensive hand gesture if people want it.
Right? Right? And
matter of fact, I have two of them.
And then what that is that we're ignoring the bigger problem and we're making a big thing out of a hoax. It was a hoax by 4chan. I mean, God bless those guys at 4chan. They're awesome. You know, Anon. They do some fun stuff. They do some hacking where it should be done. They do some practical jokes where maybe it shouldn't be done.
I think the best joke they've pulled is getting Donald Trump elected.
Maybe.
Like you can't even try to deny that part of that was people on 4chan.
I'm thinking you're absolutely right. And that's the thing. They've appropriated this, that pardon the expression, but they've taken this, and that's where our society sits right now. Is that we're just offended by every little thing and we're ignoring the big problems. Like I said earlier, it's the guns are not the problem. The problem are the people that are using the guns. Apparently they have some kind of mental problem going on that needs to be looked at rather than all this other fear mongering.
I think there's an argument to be made that the guns are a bit of a problem.
Well, I mean, they're readily available. I think
it's easy to be offended. Offended is, you know, the pinnacle of what I call slacktivism. You know, you can feel like you're railing against the man, so to speak, without ever actually having to get up and do anything.
Well, it's also like, you know, there's autism awareness. It's like, I think that worked really well. I think we're all aware of what autism is. What are we doing about it?
Right.
Right.
Yes. It's like, oh, autism, have that puzzle piece. Okay, what are you going to do about it?
Tweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's just one example, and I'm not using that. I'm not focusing that as a target. I'm just using that example. It's one of the many. And I think the issues with all these people, like shooting up schools, shooting up clubs, that there's a problem somewhere in that person's mind that got ignored through their life. That if that just one person would have said, hey, man, looks like you might need a hug. Might have helped.
I think you're vastly oversimplifying this whole thing. I think that there's a lot to be said for the culture of hate that's being spread.
Oh, that's part of it too. That's
and making people angry and income inequality. There's a huge amount of things going into this. What makes our society what it is today? And to bring it back around to our topic, to the Joker, I don't think the Joker leaned in hard enough into the kill the rich aspect of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it really, when the lead up was happening to this film, there was a huge talk about people being afraid of this being the first incel film that's going to spark a wave of violence and
I legitimately think that was news sources trying to get
incels. Yeah. I'm not trying to give that oxygen. I think that was a bunch of people who were not familiar with the film and didn't really know what it was, but were making a lot of assumptions. And what it turned out to be is a film that is primarily about mental health issues and the inequality in our society between the 1% who have all the money mm-hmm. and the 99% who do not. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they leaned in hard enough to that argument that the 1% owes the 99% a bit more than they're giving.
Yeah. You know what? And I think they, that they wanted to probably lean into it a little harder, but with the way society is right now, they said, we better back off a little bit. Because I could see, and there are various times during there, they had that potential to go that extra step or go even, you know,
you really think they're
dive right into it.
Yeah, you really think they're going to go that extra step when it's a Hollywood movie?
No.
Okay, that's exhibit A.
Take any risks.
But you also have to question if that's their direction that they genuinely want to walk in at all, or if, like, for instance, Eric, I don't actually find anything laudable about how much the movie borrowed from The King of Comedy, because lots of people have seen The King of Comedy. It's a great movie. Everybody, you know, I'm not saying that people shouldn't see it if they haven't seen it, but the movie borrowed a lot from The King of Comedy and a lot from Taxi Driver, like oodles from both of these movies.
And honestly, borrowed, a fair amount from Fight Club.
And well, yeah. And does it have anything to say really while it's dressed up in all this, or is it just basically there to make an edgy R-rated DC movie, right? That's what I'm trying to understand about this movie, and I haven't been able to figure it out, because Like, even his message about, like, I don't think that, Todd Haynes or any of them give a fuck about eating the rich. They don't care about that. They are rich, you know? So what they're doing is they're giving the Kill the Rich movement exactly as much respect as it got in The Dark Knight Rises, where basically it's treated as something that is bad for society and it's going to cause damage and people are going to be killed and all this stuff. And the same thing with mental health. People talk about this movie is really great about mental health, but let's look. I'm having a hard time with it. Maybe you guys can talk me around on it, but Arthur is really, really sick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this horrible laugh tick that comes out at inappropriate times.
Mm-hmm.
But what the film tells us is, after his medication is cut off, what he tells us, and the film seems to bear it out, is that that was his authentic self, and that all of those pills and all of the work that society was doing, however ineptly, to keep him in check, was denying his true self. And once he stops taking the medicine, not from his own volition, but because it's cut off from him, once he stops taking his medicine, he's suddenly free to do what he really wants to do. And you know what? What he really wants to do turns out to be fun and awesome. And hey, check this out. I finally found myself in murdering people. And look, people finally love me. They're all killing people too. Look, they just killed Bruce Wayne's parents for the 5 millionth time. You know what I'm saying? Like, so what is that really telling us about mental health? That we need to pay more money, like, and invest in mental health infrastructure, because otherwise we're all going to be killed by the Joker? Or, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't think the movie knows. I don't think they thought it through. And in the same way, what's he really doing? He's a guy who's reacting to his inner life being shitty, and everybody hates him, and nobody's nice to him, and everybody craps on him all the time, and he finally starts getting revenge on those people. Yeah, that's a school shooter. That's a nightclub shooter. That's a mass shooter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. That's their journey every time, is nobody loves me. Nobody fucking gets me. I don't know any women who are nice to me except my mom, and I'm going to show them all. And honestly, like, is that what this movie's about? Because it kind of seems like that's what the movie's about. And then at the end of the movie, when he's telling his story, which I hadn't considered that the entire story might have been BS that he's telling the psychiatrist at the end in the room, you know, in the prison when he's got the cuffs on, you know, but mm-hmm. after he's gotten the cuffs off and murdered her,
mm-hmm.
which again, how did he get the cuffs off? Well, he somehow...
Oh, no. No, he didn't have them off.
He didn't have them off. When he's dancing in the hallway, you can still see him because he's got his arms still together. Yeah, he still has them on.
So he was just able to murder her and whatever and get out. And then there's the little Laurel and Hardy chase, which
right.
everybody in the theater laughed at, because really, it's kind of awesome when you give up and stop taking the pills and listen to what your true self is. And, you know, before I started getting help, and when I was really, like, on the verge of getting fired because of my depression and anxiety issues, like, I thought that was my authentic self, right?
Mm-hmm.
And treatment helped me understand that that was not my authentic self. And this whole movie really seems to be that treatment is ineffective, and you should just be your authentic self and do what you're going to do, because everything's fucked anyway.
And that's where
I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, I got the opposite, basically.
But I totally did not get that.
Well, and I think if you're the filmmaker,
really
if you're
right?
if you're Todd Phillips, you have to be ready to answer those questions when they're posed to you. And I think that's been part of the issue in the post-release press junkets. Both he and Joaquin Phoenix have had difficulty, or, you know, in some instances, a downright unwillingness to have those conversations. If you're going to make a movie that is, by all indications, was made to ask these questions, to create this conversation, then you have to be willing and ready to have that conversation. And
but that's the thing. The conversation is had in the movie. They don't actually work through any of it. It's all just stuff they put on. I think, at least when I watch the movie, it's all just signifiers to make it look grown up and serious. But in the end, the movie has nothing to say.
I'm with you on this, Tim. This is what, when this was first announced and being talked about and in the process of being made, I was really skeptical about the movie that was just the Joker, because I think that if you're going to make this movie, you need Batman. you need to have someone with a different point of view than the Joker. That's why there's so much problems with this post release press junket stuff, is that the questions being asked of the filmmakers should have been asked in the film.
Right.
You know what I mean? You should have had another point of view than the Joker's to bounce this back and forth so that we as viewers can make up our minds.
They didn't really think it through, though. They didn't think it would be a big deal.
No, that's what I mean. That you're only presenting one side of an argument if you're presenting only the Joker and everything is from his point of view.
Well, that's what happens when it's basically a long play Batman origin story.
Well, I've seen dozens of stories that were only told from one unreliable narrator, sometimes a despicable character. If you switch to another point of view, you're cutting off the power of that narrative. It's just my opinion, but when you're doing a perspective film and they're done all the time, sometimes from from someone who's stable and admirable, and sometimes from someone who's unstable and scary as hell. But I think it would be cheating in this particular film to present another view. We know what that other view is, unless you're as demented as the Joker is. I mean, we know the difference between right and wrong, and that's why this is rated R, because it shouldn't be shown to someone who's unsure about the difference between right and wrong. Because yes, it could be very damaging to their psyche, but that doesn't mean that the movie shouldn't be made.
Mm. Oh no, I never said the movie shouldn't have been made. I just don't think that. I'm questioning why it was made. I'm not even questioning. I know why it was made. It's just that they didn't. I don't honestly think. Well, it's like in our group chat when I said, you know, Coldplay has this massive success with this album that they make, where it's basically taking the Radiohead sound, but making everything that's confusing and weird about it and getting rid of that and just making it love songs. And, you know, they're huge, right? And mm-hmm. So for their next album, they get some top level costumier to make them all these crazy costumes for the photo shoot. And they hire Brian Eno with a truckload of money to produce the album for them, but it's still Coldplay and he's still writing the same songs he's writing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like with this, they didn't have any real vision of what to do. They just came up with a bunch of provocative seeming signifiers and decided to turn it into a movie. And I think that choosing Todd Haynes as the guy to make that, because there's nothing in his filmography that makes you think he has the least, I'm sorry, Todd Phillips, has the least bit of curiosity about the inner lives of anybody. Well, and I mean, you can tell that from how the entire movie spends, like every time that little person is on screen, everybody in the movie craps on him constantly, mm-hmm. even, you know, and everybody in the theater is laughing with that weird, uncomfortable, like, oh my God, I can't believe they said that, because right. little people are one of the few groups left who haven't organized in such a way that people like Todd Phillips can't, you know, shit on them in a movie. So everything is set up to humiliate. Every time this guy is on screen, people do nothing but throw out pretty funny jokes about his size and his life. And then at the end of his last scene, when he's told to leave the apartment, the biggest laugh of all, he can't reach the chain, and the Joker comes and lets him out and kisses him on the head. That is pointless cruelty. And the thing is, Todd Phillips is not a guy that is curious about the inner lives of the people. So I really, I'm going to say, I think you guys just want to believe. I don't think it's really there in the movie.
I don't know, Tim. I think the way he examined the human condition in the Hangover films, really, I thought it was really poignant.
I don't think anybody's going to be talking about this movie in 5 years.
The deep, soulful character study that was the Hangover franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, to borrow from Coldplay, I think one of the things that they actually do is they have people talk. Ah, see what I did there? Anyway.
Wasn't that craft work that made them?
But no, that's the, anyway. I think that's one of the things I think we can maybe agree on, is that if nothing else, maybe they couldn't answer those questions. Maybe they don't want to answer those questions. Maybe there's like, oh crap, that's a side effect we had. I forgot all about that. And oh, it worked, didn't it? Look at us. We're geniuses. But maybe it got people like us. I mean, yeah, we're nerdy and we talk the crap out of everything. But how many other people to get them to, hey, you know what? Maybe we should sit down and talk about this. Maybe it got something started.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, If it does, I would be delighted to be wrong. I think this movie is going to be all controversy and no, like, I don't think anybody's going to remember it in a few years.
Ah,
I could be mistaken, but I just don't see this having the same cultural impact as Dark Knight or the Dark Knight movie did.
Well,
yeah. Well, and I think I think a lot of what we've talked about here today is maybe a good precursor to that. You know, because this is derivative of so many other movies, those other movies are going to be remembered.
Hey,
Taxi Driver and you know, King of Comedy, Fight Club, movies that have similar themes that run through them. Those movies are going to be remembered, and this is going to be an odd amalgamation of a bunch of different ideas that maybe won't have a lasting impact.
Well, let's put it this way. I can't see someone 10 years from now making a film that heavily borrows from Joker.
Right. That's cool. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's it. Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I think that's a perfect place to end this on because, first of all, I know a lot of us have other things that we need to get to doing, and we have real lives, I guess.
I'm just a college student. I don't have anything to do.
My wife doesn't get off work for another hour, so I'm good. By the way, before we leave, I got to give Gil some props. He is rocking some killer mutton chops for his upcoming role. Yeah? Oh, they are spectacular. He's playing Colonel Mustard in our local community college production of Clue, and nice. He is rocking some killer mutton chops.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah,
that's one of the things. It's funny. I went in and I posted a picture of Colonel Mustard once I got cast, and one of my friends said, "If you're not wearing mutton chops, we can no longer be friends." And I'm like, that's a great idea. So I started growing them, and the other day I made the change. And thanks, Tony, for noticing.
Yeah,
they're pretty sharp.
And if we stuck a half an olive on his cheek, he'd look a little more like Lemmy from Motorhead.
Nice. Eat some speeds! Oh, anyway. And by the way, anybody that's listening to the podcast, and especially you guys that are here with me, you're formally invited to come see my premiere as Colonel Mustard as I solve the crimes myself. Okay, maybe not, but Clue, it's an awesome show. But yeah, thanks. I like the mutton chops. I might have to keep them forever. No, not at all. They're going away. But yeah, thanks. And we'll be actually next weekend we open. So, but anyway, there's a good place to stop. Once again, guys, thanks for coming back again. We're going to do this. We'll try to maybe a weekly thing. Who knows? We'll, you know how our schedules always get interfered with. I think one of the things we're wanting to talk about is the upcoming Star Trek Picard series.
Well, and we could talk about the whole debacle between Marvel and Disney, or not Marvel and Disney, but Marvel and Fox, Disney and Fox, whatever it is.
Sony and Disney.
Yeah.
Sony and Disney, Disney and Disney, and, you know.
Spam and eggs.
I was disappointed that they worked it out.
Were you?
I was.
No.
Well, I think we'd have gotten a whole lot more Spider-Man movies had they not worked it out.
Right. That's a hot take right there.
I was kind of hoping Sony would get Spider-Man back.
Because
that might actually just straight up just knock Disney down. Because, like, if they take Spider-Man out of the MCU, what do they have? They've got, like, Captain Marvel.
They still have Thor.
They have Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy. But, like, do any of the other characters really, like, stick out as characters?
That aren't dead?
Yeah.
Spoilers!
Captain America, Iron Man. Yeah.
And they can't do a standalone Hulk movie, so he can be guest spots in their movies. But
yeah,
I'm just ready to see another Spider-Man movie that isn't secretly really an Iron Man movie that happens to have Spider-Man.
Yeah, the honest trailers from Screen Junkies pointed that out pretty good. Their title was instead of Spider-Man Far From Home, it was A Boy Who Knew Iron Man.
Totally.
Yes.
The first one was like an issue of Marvel Team Up. The second one was like the issue of Iron Man after Iron Man gets quote unquote killed, and they have to have other characters fill in for a few months before he can come back.
Uh-huh.
It was like the Spider-Man fill in issue of Iron Man's book while they're pretending he's dead.
Uh-huh. Hey, I wanted to plug one thing before we cut off here. For horror fans, this is October, and Halloween is around the corner. What's his name from Greg Nicotero from the K&B special effects makeup is producing a series based on Creepshow. And
yes,
it's on the Shudder Network, which is available on like Roku and Amazon and a few other places. Or you can watch it on their website. It's like $5 a month, so it's not bad. And they've got a lot of interesting horror documentaries on there, which I love. but this series is actually pretty good. It's missing a lot of the stylish things about the movie that I love so much. But the stories are solid, and the acting is solid. So, you can sign up for 7 days for free, and it's $5 after that. But I definitely recommend it.
Well, you know what? I would love the idea that they're doing Creepshow, because that was such a great concept to do a basic series on, especially. But I am going to have a hard time getting Isaac to watch it, because unfortunately, when he was like 5, 6, maybe 7 years old, I forced him to watch Creepshow, and he would not even, when the Father's Day cake part was there, he stopped and went screaming out of the room and would never even look at the CD box.
I've watched it since then.
Oh, you have watched it since then?
It's more of a lack of interest now. I remembered it as scary, and then I watched it, and it just wasn't.
Right?
It's amazing how often that happens. You remember things as being fantastic when you were little? Go back and try to watch the original Knight Rider with David Hasselhoff. That's freaking atrocious.
Good Lord.
I thought Hasselhoff became a lousy actor when he did Baywatch. No, he was always a bad actor. Always.
He was a good actor in the SpongeBob movie.
Yeah, I think because he was playing David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, he's playing David Hasselhoff. Yeah, exactly.
It worked in the SpongeBob movie.
Yeah, so, well, guys, let's wrap this up. I'm done with you guys. we're getting weird. Hey, wait, before we do go, Eric, did you have something to do with Anne Frank there down there at the stage company?
Yeah, I'm not involved directly with the production. I'm in the promotions department promoting it. But yeah, we open at the Varsity Center of the Arts in Carbondale, Illinois. We opened last night.
Oh, wow.
We have a show tonight, and then there's a matinee tomorrow, and then we repeat the process next weekend, and the Sunday will be the final show. So if you're in or around Southern Illinois, this is a newish adaptation of Anne Frank's diary. So if you've seen it before, you probably haven't seen this production. So come see us.
Now with more jazzy song numbers.
Yeah. My favorite part. Yeah, you'll love springtime for
history. Yeah, the dance scene, right, Tim?
Does Hitler get a solo?
Ouch, ouch, ouch. Well, all right, so you got the Diary of Anne Frank down in Carbondale. You can come see Clue at Lincoln Trail Theater here in Robinson, Lincoln Trail College Theater here in Robinson. And I'll be in that one. I'm Colonel Mustard, and I got a wrench. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, so there you go. If you need some theatrical influences in your life, there's two of them in Illinois to go through. Shit. All right, guys. So, again, thanks for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. Tony, thanks for joining. Tony's going to be, since he's available here, and we talk nerdy at work every day. It's not a day goes by that something science fiction-y or comic book-y gets mentioned, and we just roll with it. So, I always have him to fill in, but it's a pleasure having you guys back. I mean, really, it's like kind of like a homecoming thing, you know, without the booze.
I love it.
Hey, so, and I do appreciate you guys allowing me to come and kind of play around in your yard a little bit. I appreciate you inviting me on and allowing me to nerd out.
That's been great.
You know, what I appreciated is we've talked now for an hour and I haven't heard any of your eyes roll once. Whereas when I'm at home, I start off on this diatribe and I can hear my wife's eyes roll.
Right. Exactly.
There is an audible noise.
Exactly. So, well, that's it for this time on Nerd Out Podcast. We got, again, Star Trek may be coming up soon. We've got other topics we can definitely cover, and we'll get together again. And guys, again, thanks for joining me. Remember, support the Nerd Up Podcast. You can do so by going to the Eagle Theater and letting them know where you heard it. Or you can go to nerduppodcast.com, and we have a link for our T-shirts and stuff like that, coffee mugs, and you can get yourself one of those. Or just make a donation even. That's possible. We don't mind it. Like the price of a comic book, maybe $2.99. Is that
pay
what
off
now?
My college debt.
We got to pay off Isaac's college debt. That's what it is.
I'm suffering.
I'm still paying off my college debt. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Look at how much I'm going to have to pay.
So help support the podcast if you want to, if you can. Other than that, like we say at the end of every single episode, stay nerdy.